people who love them.
All right, so we are rolling. Thank you for joining us. This is The Thing About Cars. This is an episode we've been thinking about trying to do for a long time, a motorcycle episode. We have three avid motorcyclists around the table, and then there's me. So I'm going to try to keep track of this conversation. But in the meantime, let's do our introductions as usual.
Ben.
Misty.
Tom.
Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you. Ben, this is your motorcycles are more your thing than mine, so please take it away.
All right. Well, I've been riding for, about 18 years or so, and it's something I've always done. I've been into cars longer, of course, but I think the two go together better than most people really, you know, give them credit for. And I thought, why don't we bring these worlds together in an episode?
Right. And so what are we going to talk about besides motorcycles?
the people who ride them would be a big one. How we all interact out there on the road, maybe some safety ideas, some of the equipment itself, what turns our crank, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, we were talking before about stuff to put up on the board as our agenda, and a lot of things regarding motorcycles just really haven't changed in a long time. Like, Tom, you said that the thing you want drivers, car drivers to know is?
Just see us. That visibility is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. The catchphrase that you see on some bumper stickers, look twice, save a life.
Yeah.
I've heard, what was that one thing that instead of playing punch bug, you should reward somebody for seeing a motorcycle? Have you heard about this?
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah.
Whenever I see someone on the road who actually identifies and stops pulling out, I give them a wave, I give them a head nod, I thank them for not being on their phone, not munching on the burger instead of driving the car.
The burger, man, you can't, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I've heard of a game. Like some people are trying to, you know, foster this game within their own families where they'll play, instead of playing punch buggy for seeing the bug, if you catch a motorcycle, if you're the first one to spot the motorcycle, you get a treat or you get points towards some sort of treat. So now you're training your kids to notice these things early. It gets ingrained that way, which I think is a fantastic idea.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Let's let our guests tell us about their riding experiences and what they ride and what they like to ride. Misty, can you fill us in?
So I've been riding for probably 15, 16 years. I rode a 2017 Chieftain Dark Horse. It's an Indian motorcycle, non-crotch rocket. I have to have my saddlebags.
Right.
We try to do, you know, a lot of, me and my husband both ride. We try to do a lot of donational rides when we can. We don't find the time very often to go out and do the fun rides where you're out there just kind of cruising around. But my main thing is I drive back and forth to work in it about an hour and 15 minutes every day. It's free to drive in the Peach Pass. So it saves you $32 a day.
Awesome.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe I should learn how to ride. Tom.
So I've been riding a little over a dozen years. I've got two bikes currently. I've got a BMW R1200 GS, which is a kind of a tallish adventure style bike. And I also have a Vespa 300 scooter. And that's my around town cruising bike. So
does a scooter count as a bike?
In some circles it does, other circles it does not. You know, many other bikers don't wave at me on the road, so occasionally I'll get them back and do the Forrest Gump high wave.
I think they count, and there are a lot of scooters these days that are really starting to kind of blur the lines. You know, they may not have a fuel tank between your knees, but they've got bigger tires, bigger brakes, bigger engines, and bigger performance than scooters traditionally did, so I count them.
And I mean, I've had scooters for the whole dozen years I've been riding on and off various, everything from 110cc up through a 650. I caught the Vespa bug through traveling to Europe several times and seeing the Vespas, and the skills of the riders in Europe are tremendous on scooters, far above what you see in the U.S.
Yeah.
And it's just a blast to ride around town. But It will get up to speed. It'll get up to highway speeds, but I don't ride it on the highway. But that's what the big bike is for, is to head up to the mountains.
What makes a European driver more skilled than an American driver?
Focus. They're just driving. Even the people that you see in the car. So I've driven a lot in Italy, Spain, England, more so in Spain and Italy, is that they're focused on driving. It's rare to see them on the phones. You always hear the stories, oh, they drive crazy in Italy. I love driving in Italy. No, it's not crazy. Yes, they're more aggressive, but that's typically all they're doing. And they also watch for bikes. Motorcycles are prevalent in the society there. So you'll actually see them move a little bit to the side and let a bike through in a congested area. So lane splitting, lane sharing is typical there. It's allowed everywhere in the world, but 49 states in the U.S.
Yeah, I'd back up the European thing, too, because I've lived and driven in Germany a bit, and the Germans have probably the most marvelous system of driver and rider licensing and training in the world. If you're on two wheels in Germany, you start at, I think it's 50 cc's or something. The licenses are graduated. You go up to 125 or 150 or something. You have to take a test for each next level up, and there are time requirements, on the road as well. And they take their safety very seriously. I can recall one day in Germany seeing this guy coming down the street in these black leathers. He looked like Darth Vader. And he hops on a little 150cc scooter. But he was protected. If he was going to get into a tumble, he would walk away,
Sure.
As opposed to having all his elbows and knees and everything ground off by the pavement.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, compared that to U.S. training. So I'm also an MSF rider coach.
Okay.
So I instruct... in motorcycle riding for the state of Georgia.
And for the uneducated, MSF stands for?
Motorcycle Safety Foundation.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's good.
So that is the, there's a couple other teaching arms, but that's the primary organization that puts forth the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So our curriculum typically in the U.S. is about 2 days of training, maybe 16 to 17 hours of both classroom and not on road, but in a parking lot. And our catchphrase is at the end of that course is, great, you now have been trained to ride a motorcycle up to 20 miles an hour in a parking lot.
Right.
You've got to really go practice, but there is no education typically beyond that. We really talk to people about going and getting more education, but they don't even have to take that course. You can go test out for your license by yourself without getting any motorcycle training. I had a girl in my most recent class. She said her boyfriend learned by watching YouTube videos.
Oh, wow.
And has never taken a course.
YouTube University.
Yeah.
Misty, where did you learn to ride?
I learned, my husband made me take the course.
And I've heard that's the way to do it. Easiest, most safe way to get educated.
Agreed. It is. And mine was actually a week-long course, but it was in a parking lot. And when you get out, you kind of go, you're trying to remember the 18 billion things that they teach you. And then 15 billion cars are coming at you nonstop. And so it is a little intimidating. But I like to keep up my stuff by watching just videos, getting professional people that do that for a living, kind of like you, Tom, and having videos to watch and kind of keeping my skills up. And, when I kind of start thinking that I'm forgetting the safety of what it's like to ride on a motorcycle, I just stick that in and I go, oh, I'm not supposed to do that. Bad habit to form. And so I kind of keep it refreshed in my head. Because if I don't, then, you don't use it, you lose it.
So wait a minute. So you find it's easier to slip into some bad habits?
Yeah, you do. I mean, well, here in Atlanta, I mean, driving here in traffic, I used to have a 650 and I just, there wasn't enough gumption to keep yourself safe, in my opinion. And I had to go to a bigger motorcycle. And to do that, though, you start, you get comfortable. Mm-hmm. With your riding. It's like, I got this. And you start doing things that you normally should not do. Like you start looking down at the road versus, looking at your horizon and looking out for what's out in front of you. Instead, you're just kind of, you find yourself looking at the car in front of you or the car to the right. And you're not really focusing on what you should be focusing on. You got your radio on and your helmet, you're bebopping down the road.
How many times do you go out and practice emergency maneuvers, swerving or braking? It's very rare. I don't want to demean as far as the training that we do. It is called the beginner's course for that reason. It is the beginner's course. That's your start of your motorcycling career. And we encourage people to start on back roads, but also to get further education from there. There's many more courses that go up to help you improve your skills.
Oh, yes.
Beyond that.
Yeah, and beyond just the ones you can get at the MSF, local places, there's a guy out of, I think, Virginia who will take you on country twisties with a little radio in your helmet. He's right behind you and giving you all kinds of feedback. You can do track days. You can do all kinds of different instructional things. In fact, I heard just recently, BMW operates a instructional facility up in Greer, South Carolina, and they just added, they already had on and off-road motorcycle training there. They just added a police-type course. And that's one that I'm kind of interested in.
So the police-type course would teach me how to chase down bad guys and arrest them?
No, how to do really impressive things around orange cones for the most part. But no, it's very good low-speed maneuvering skills.
Oh, I see.
It is amazing. My husband's a police officer, and he went through the course, and I begged to get in it. But
and the BMW
you can't get into it.
How come?
You just, if you're not in the the LEO program, then, you know, I mean, then everybody would want to come to it who rode, right?
And that's what I was about to lead into. There are very, very, very few courses in the country that offer this. The BMW one is one. There's another one in Washington State that I'm aware of, but that's about it.
Huh. Interesting.
But it's all about, you know, using your throttle and your clutch and your weight distribution to do some things at low speed that will make you go, ah!
For anybody who sort of missed that, we should have taken a picture of that and put it up on there. Let's shift gears here for half a second, because there's plenty of stuff I want to ask, especially regarding the culture of biking. You know, we're talking to three people at the table here who are, I was going to say into the sport, but that's not right, into the art of riding a bike and riding it responsibly and safely, right? But there are tons of people out there, it seems, who don't share these values. You know, I mean, how many times am I driving down the interstate? I'm already going 75-ish miles an hour, and I see people on crotch rockets just blowing by me like I'm doing nothing, like I'm in park.
Squid.
Squid?
Squid is the name for those antics. Yep.
The crotch rocket is the bike. The squid is the rider. it's kind of a contraction for squirrely kid.
Okay. I was going to ask, what does squid stand for?
Right.
Okay. Squirrely kid. So these are people who clearly haven't taken the course, clearly don't share the respect for the discipline it takes to be a good rider.
May or may not, but have, you know, have gone that other way of their risk of riding goes sometimes beyond their skill. And they just, in cases, don't care. You'll also see them rarely wearing any protective gear whatsoever.
Yeah.
At least here in Georgia, they'll have a helmet on, but that's about it. There's many states that don't even have helmet laws. It's that reckless driver on a crotch rocket, if you will, for the most part.
Misty, you were shaking your head a second ago.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking to myself, my favorite is when they do the wheelies right down the highway.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're like, you're going to be the one that's not going to be hit, but I'm who's driving safely down the road is going to be swiped by some car. And it's
right.
To me, it's luck. They're lucky. They're very lucky.
Yeah, even if they don't hurt themselves, just the amount of kind of panic and shock and surprise they cause in the other traffic could be dangerous.
Right.
Yeah. It's just the image that they provide for bikers. I mean, you know, we keep trying to grow the sport, and it's just such a bad image of, you know, it hits that stereotype of, okay, we've gotten away from the Marlon Brando outlaw type of biker to now it's that crazy guy on the sport bike or the crotch rocket.
Right.
All right. Shall we do a quick moment of motorcycle trivia?
Sure.
I have a few questions here. You guys will probably not have any problems answering any of these. So I have two questions for this particular episode. Well, maybe just one. This one's pretty easy. In 1887, this motorcycle building company started as a piano manufacturer, but today produces a number of different things, including boats, car engines, golf carts, and motorcycles. Any idea what that company is? Don't shout it out yet. Is it Wurlitzer, Yamaha, Kawasaki, or Suzuki? And we'll give the answer in a couple minutes when we wrap up this episode. Ben, I don't think we discussed what you currently ride.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm on a 2012 BMW R1200 GS, similar to what Tom has. Mm-hmm. It's what's known in the biz as a dual sport bike. It looks like a big overgrown dirt bike or kind of a two-wheeled SUV. And I don't ride it because of that. I have no ambition to conquer the unpaved world. I ride it on road, but the reason I have that model is because it has plenty of leg room. I'm a big, tall fella, so I need some leg room. Some of those sporty little bikes are cool, but when I sit on them, my knees are up in my armpits, and it's just not pretty.
I hate it when that happens.
Right, and I've been a BMW guy since I started out, believe it or not. My first bike was one, so they've always kind of been my thing.
Right. in the first time I heard you say that, it kind of caught me by surprise. It's like, oh, I guess the dimensions on a bike do actually make a difference. I
mean, they do.
Yeah, in a huge way. And Misty, you were saying earlier that it seems like bikes typically aren't designed for women.
No, I don't. There are some, like Tom had suggested, that they are starting to come out, but anything, in my opinion, bigger than a 650, it's very difficult to find something that fits a smaller. I mean, I'm 5'3", and I had to have my bike lowered just to get extra engine lowered. My seat had to be moved up. I couldn't control the handlebars very well. So, you know, I had to modernize or customize my bike to fit me because I couldn't ride it.
Is this why you chose an Indian?
I chose the Indian because it was already lowered, and I'm not, my husband's a Harley person. They're very top heavy to me. We used to have a 1200 custom Sportster, and it just very top heavy. I thought the Indian was more spread out, easier to handle. I mean, it weighs the exact same thing almost as my husband's, though. I don't know if it's just psychological.
Lower center of gravity, though, probably makes a huge difference.
It does. Huge.
Okay. So, yeah.
But there are problems at the other end of the scale. So for Ben and I that are, you know, 6'3", 6'4", there are a lot of smaller bikes, an Indian Scout, and others that I can't fit on. The ergonomics are, they're just too crunched up. I can't get comfortable on the bike at all. One of the reasons why we ride this BMW GS style is it is designed for typically taller guys or taller women, although I have a friend who is about 5'7", 5'8", that rides a GS as well.
Oh, yeah.
So they can be modified. You can modify almost any bike to fit, to make it a little bit smaller, and the bike manufacturers are getting better with that. It's hard to stretch it out, though.
I've seen a shorter guy on a GS do these beautiful rolling dismounts. He doesn't have enough inseam to flat foot it when he's sitting still, so... Yeah, as he comes to a stop, you know, he swings one leg off. He's still got one leg on the pegs. He comes to a stop, and then he steps off. It's really amazing to watch. I wonder how many times he busted his butt, you know, learning that. But it's fabulous to watch, you know. And, yeah, that ergonomics thing. I did try to ride a friend's Yamaha R6, which is a sporty little crotch rocket, a couple of years ago. And, oh, my God, it scared the bejesus out of me because I'm cramped up, you know, on this thing in fetal position, basically. And I know that if I goose it too hard, it will have no compunction about flipping over and landing on top of me.
Sure.
So, you know, it was scary. I couldn't wait to get off of it.
Right. No, and all you guys are reminding me that my mom, who's a retired physician and an ex-girlfriend who did open head wound, open brain neuropsychology work, both expressly forbade me to ever ride a bike, ever. A motorcycle ever. And I'm like, come on, really? So fortunately, the woman I'm married to doesn't seem to have that problem.
My mom was just not while you're living in my house. I had a ride on the back of one that a coworker of hers bought when I was 13, I think. And I came in the house with this big, stupid grin. And I said, I want one. And she said, not while you're living in my house.
Right.
I didn't get my first one till I was 33. And it took me 6 months to bring myself to tell her I had gotten it.
Now, do you guys ride? Do your wives ride?
So,
Tom, yeah,
Ben? Uniquely, my wife does not ride. She rides with me, and it's only in the colder months. So her riding season here in Georgia is typically from October to maybe April or May, and we ride year-round. She doesn't like the heat, so she rides when it's colder. Now, you know, creature comforts, we make it comfortable. So we have heated jackets. We have heated seats. So we can handle, you know, anything into the 30s.
Yeah, well, my wife's strictly passenger. She doesn't ride her own, but we have a lot of fun with it. We did get the helmet intercoms. That makes things easier.
And helmet communication. Yeah, I mean, that's been probably one of the biggest things these days is communications of helmet to helmet, not only on group rides, but if you're riding with a passenger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, typically 90% of the time, my wife and I keep an open mic and just have a conversation as if you're sitting in the car.
Right.
It's my one time to turn him off.
I was going to ask. I'm like, I think I need some silence. Click.
Yep. Shush.
Well, when the person behind you is trying to tell you something and you can't tell what they're trying to say, and, you know, do I need to pull over, you know, for a restroom, or do I need to pull over for something more important, medical or something?
You're on fire or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good to know with a passenger what they need.
Well, we're almost out of time here, so I think we should wrap this episode and hit our trivia question. The question is, in 1887, I mean, this is 1887, right?
Yeah, I know the answer.
Yeah, you know the answer. In 1887, this motorcycle building company started as a piano manufacturer. You guys want to take a guess?
Kawasaki?
I'd have to put Yamaha.
Ben?
Yamaha.
It is Yamaha. Mm-hmm. Yamaha started off making pianos and then became this huge multinational conglomerate that makes now everything, musical instruments.
Oh, yeah.
Do they make sewing machines? They might.
I don't know, but I mean, they still make pianos.
They still make pianos.
If you look at their logo on the side of the motorcycle, it's three tuning forks.
Yes.
Kind of superimposed into a little star.
Right. So that's our trivia question for the day. Then can we do a second episode? You guys good for doing another one?
Sure.
Great. We're going to turn around and do one more, and we have some listener questions. Our friend Eric Murphy asks three questions that we'll tackle on the next episode. He says, what are your thoughts on Harley Davidson? With their core buyers aging out, what can they do, if anything, to get younger buyers? So we'll think about that, tackle that one in a minute. The second question is, do you feel millennials are not riding motorcycles? And if so, why not? And then the third question is, let's talk about electric motorcycles. Just a general prompt there to talk about electrics and bikes. So we'll tackle that in the upcoming episode. Thank you, as always, to the listener for joining us. You guys have any parting words of wisdom?
Ride safe.
Yeah.
Be safe.
Ride safe. And for all your drivers out there, watch for motorcycles.
Tom, if people want to find out how to take the course, where do they find it?
Head to msf-usa.org.
How much does it cost?
It's about $250 for the weekend, the BRC Basic Rider course.
Okay, very cool. Thanks, as always, to our friends and family of listeners for joining us, and we will see you in about a week with another episode of The Thing About Cars.
Vroom.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.